Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to do a return to questioning Paul to try to figure out what scam Paul was trying to play. But before we do, I'd like to welcome Kirk. I know you were listening to the end of that first hour, Kirk. First of all, thank you for doing Friday's show where I was driving up to the hospital. Thank you also for your work on the covers for the Intro to God, Questioning Paul, and Yada Yada. They look magnificent.
Well, I'm delighted you're happy with them. I hope it all works out where the publisher can put them all together and make them look really good.
So. Yeah, boy, they sure look good from the things that you've sent me. They're all a very quick read. They're really nicely done. A huge improvement. So I'm assuming that they'll print these color covers on a white background.
They could use a graduated tone. They could, you know, the people who designed that, they know what they have to have for production. So mm-hmm. It's up to them, and I'm sure they'll do the right thing and give you some galleys or show you some proof before they do anything. So hopefully everything will work out really well. So.
Spectacular. Yeah, I really like them.
Thank you.
Very happy with them. That was the only part of the existing publication I was not happy with is the inconsistency of the covers with the titles on them and the placement of them. There was all very different fonts, different position, different size, different mm-hmm. kind of everything, and it was not particularly attractive, although the material of the cover was quite good. So I'm looking forward to having these professionally drawn by our resident artiste. Yes, checks in the mail, as they say. So in that first hour, do you get a kind of a feel as to why Iowa doesn't want us dependent upon government and economic schemes?
Well, absolutely, because the answers are there. But you know, there's a TV show I watch every now and then. It's called The Prophet, and where this guy goes into these companies that are, for all practical purposes, are bankrupt or in such bad shape they're on their death door.
And Prophet, you know, with an F rather than a PH, right?
PROFIT, yes, Prophet.
Right.
Make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on the ropes. They're going to die if he walks out the room because they can't get money from anybody because they owe millions or whatever the situation. Mm-hmm. And he goes in, and he not only writes them a check for a percentage, he takes over full control and he says, okay, we're going to fix the process that you're manufacturing or whatever you're doing, the personnel, you know, and so forth. And then he shows them how to get customer base. So, I mean, outside of doing something like that for Greece, you can't turn them around because all you're doing is loaning them money and there's no controls over what they do with it.
Yeah, but in a country, there is no turning around because the people have become dependent. Once they're dependent, it's over. They won't accept the responsibility to be self-sufficient. So they are dependent. They will riot. There will be total anarchy as a result of them having become dependent. And so there is no resolution of this problem. If the euro loans them more money, then a year from now we'll be going through the same song and dance. It's just going to be a bigger crash, and this time it's guaranteed because the terms and conditions that will be imposed with the European Union having control over Greece and Greek banks that they will put in place so that if there's any variation from the agreed terms, there'll be automatic default. And because now no one will trust the Greek banks or the Greek government, they're going to withdraw money from Greek banks and Greek government, which means there'll be less capital to drive the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is now in the fait accompli. This is what they call in an airplane a death spiral.
Yeah.
You're in a death spiral. You cannot get out.
So well, that's what all you're doing is loaning them a check anyway. I mean, there's no money behind the money that they're giving them.
Illusion of money in economies, the illusion of solvency mm-hmm. is a powerful addicting drug.
Oh yeah,
it's just like religion. The illusion of a positive outcome, the illusion of heaven, of a reward, is a powerful opiate.
Okay, now that brings me to a question.
Mm-hmm.
I attempted to read Roy's email.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost implies that that we're total random selection.
Mm-hmm.
And then our choices are based on, I guess, those DNA connections.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that explain why my frustration through the last 7 years has been why it's so hard to explain this, or when you explain it, maybe I thought I was just couldn't explain it, or I was dumb in some way that I could get it, but I couldn't, but other people don't get it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just because they're not programmed right to get it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that that individuals are genetically programmed not to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they are programmed not to get it, but it has nothing to do with genetics. It has all to do with politics and patriotism and the belief in these economic schemes. It's the opiate of human institutions that program people. Yeah, don't be judgmental. Coexist. Be tolerant. Avoid hate speech unless it's hateful of the things that the socialist secular humanist hates, and then it's okay to hate those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can hate guns, but you can't hate the drugs that cause people to become shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a
even
programming,
there,
yes. And the programming is to cause people not to be thoughtful, to lead them astray, to have them become drug addicts on the opiate that is false hope.
Even what you said right there, the example that you gave is that,
mm-hmm,
you're supposed to hate guns. Guns are the thing that killed people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Don't question anything else. Don't look for anything else there. Just
right.
Take at face value what I'm saying.
Right.
And I think, like you said, that's not genetics. It's not like they don't have the ability to do it. They just never do. And they never have.
You know, and on this point, I want to go one step beyond, because this is the essence of why people get trapped in religion. It's why you're unable, Kirk,
mm-hmm,
to explain Yahweh's offer, which is so marvelous to people in a way that they wish to capitalize on it. It is the fact that if you look at the school shooter or the mass shooter again, the Charleston shooter, the fact that they are given drugs, or that they're taking drugs that change their ability to process information and that make them either more violent, more aggressive, less responsible, well, that is a contributing factor. The primary problem, and the reason we're seeing such an uptick in terrorist acts and in these kind of mass killings, is because for the last two or three generations, in the schools, in the media, and politically, we have all been programmed to embrace what's called political correctness.
Sure.
And in political correctness, we've been programmed to forego exercising good judgment, for differentiating between right and wrong, good and bad. And so you're considered pejorative and hateful if you criticize something that is false or counterproductive or untrue or violent. You're considered hateful when you express good judgment against those things which are counterproductive. And therefore, if you've been raised and programmed, indoctrinated or programmed, such that you no longer exercise good judgment, which is political correctness, that is the whole mentality of today's educational indoctrination, then at the end of the process, you can't figure out why what you did in that church or that school or that theater, you've lost the capacity to process why that's wrong, why that's immoral. Because right and wrong have, there's no distinction between right and wrong if you're not being judgmental. And judgmental is the anathema of political correctness, of the religion of socialist secular humanism. That gets right to the core. Now, how do we apply that to religion? Well, if you've been indoctrinated in your culture between the religion that you were born into, the political and propaganda politics, the patriotism that you were inbred with, that you got from your school, from your media, and from your politicians, and your church, if you're constantly programmed with that, then the false hope that it is offering you, the sense of values that they are proposing, although they are completely erroneous and counterproductive, but it's an opiate.
Mm-hmm.
And people are hooked on the opiate. And to get the person who has been deceived by false hope to let go of that which is untrue is extremely difficult. It's just like trying to tell somebody that's hooked on the feeling that they get when they take heroin, to tell them, no, you can't have that feeling anymore because it's counterproductive to you. It's extremely difficult, no matter how logically you present the fact that that heroin is killing you. It's not making you feel good. It's killing you. You need to forego the euphoria you get when you put that stuff in your veins. They won't do it, no matter how persuasive you are logically. And the sense of well-being, the sense of euphoria that goes from the opiate of religion is very similar. And they won't let go of it. That's why it has nothing to do with you now. Do you think you're smarter than God?
No.
Do you think you're more articulate than God?
Not even close.
Okay. Do you think that you could make a more convincing argument on behalf of the covenant than God did?
No, I know where you're going. It's just absolutely no.
Okay. And how well did Yahweh fare with the children of Israel that he communicated his plan to directly in the first person using his own voice? And that he gave an original autograph of the Torah and even had a person share the Torah with them. Now, how well did God come out with the children of Israel during the Exodus away from? And by the way, he's a little more powerful than you are, Kirk. He broke the back of Egypt and led his children, freed them from all of these human institutions that were offering false hope. And how well did he do?
Yeah, well, they wanted to turn around and go right back. Yeah.
Yeah. So why would you expect to be doing better? Let's take it beyond Yahweh as God. Let's take the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, Yahusha. He picked 12 disciples, spent 3 years with them, talked with them, performed miracles in front of them, explained who he was and what he was doing from the perspective of the Torah with them. And at the end of that 3 years, he became the Passover lamb. And the not only became the Passover lamb, but also fulfilled matzah and bukurim. Did he find his disciples all waiting for his return on Bukurim, fully understanding what he was doing?
No, unfortunately not.
No. Did they even recognize him when he returned to them on Bukurim and appeared in their midst?
No, and there's a reason for that, but they weren't even looking for him, so they weren't expecting him.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even know that he was that the old body was destroyed, so he's coming back as a in a different material form that's a combination between spirit and matter, energy and matter. No, they didn't recognize it. He wouldn't have had to introduce himself, didn't he? Here's who I am. And then when we read Yahochanan, half of the book is based upon him trying now to explain to them all that had transpired and what was going to transpire on Shavua. All right? And these are 12 guys, now 11 at this point, but that he had spent 3 years with. And I have a hunch he was reasonably influential, reasonably assertive, reasonably consistent and compelling in his verbal presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, your point.
And he couldn't even communicate to his disciples, for crying out loud. As a matter of fact, once he explains to his disciples, the disciples start communicating, and there's a handful of people elsewhere that kind of put it together and came to understand, and then he empowered them with the set-apart spirit 50 days later, or actually 7 sevens from Bukurim, 49 days later, where they're thousands of people?
There was a few thousand that heard and became Israeli.
Yeah, maybe it's so at the beginning, maybe scores.
That was,
and that, and we really don't know how accurate the accounting is of the Christian New Testament, but
true.
Let's say there was 1,000, maybe 2,000, maybe even 3,000. How many people do you think existed in the world at that time?
Well, there's certainly hundreds of millions at that point.
Yeah, maybe even a billion.
Had a couple hundred million, yeah, at least. And
yeah, a few hundred million, sure, a few hundred million.
Yeah, easy.
So maybe 3,000 amongst 300 million?
Yeah, numbers seem to always work out that way, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, one in a million?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the number, and you know, etched in stone that that thousands would receive his message, would contemplate the terms and conditions of the covenant, observe them, come to embrace them, understand them. That thousands, in fact, he just says that thousands are going to receive his mercy by observing the terms and conditions of the covenant. So if you're willing to observe, willing to closely examine and carefully consider them, then you're naturally prone to accept them. Acceptance is almost a
guarantee.
A guarantee. Let's talk about programming. If you're programmed by the terms and conditions of the covenant as they're presented in Yahweh's Torah instructions, if that is your programming, then consider yourself appropriately programmed, and you'll accept the covenant. And that's how you get good programming.
All right. Well,
right, that's the world's best computer code. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's the programming.
It's logically thought out. It's not a command. That's why
right.
It's not a command.
Right.
So
what God is inferring here strongly is that 100% of those who are properly programmed with his Torah instructions regarding the terms and conditions of his covenant, that all of them, 100% of those who are programmed with his Torah instructions regarding his covenant, receive his mercy. Therefore, they're adopted into his family. And would it be fair to say that very few of those who are programmed, you know, like in the range of one in hundreds of thousands, maybe even one in a million, of those who are programmed with man's opiates, religion, politics, patriotism, militarism, economic schemes, that one in a million of those will at least consider thoughtfully the programming that Dion was making possible in his Torah, and therefore, being programmed by man, they fail.
Yeah.
They die. I think all this is related.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
And I do think it's about programming.
Mm-hmm.
Not of genetics.
No.
No, it's programming. Is whose programming do you receive? Man's or God's? Whose do you accept? Whose do you focus on? Whose do you observe? Let's return to genetic programming, if we could, for a moment, Kirk. The DNA, isn't it a computer programming code?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a three-dimensional code. You know, it's four variables in it, but it's in a double helix, so it's two parallel strands of code, but written in three dimensions, twisted in a double helix. So it's a programming code.
Mm-hmm.
You know, far more than it's. While it is a, it's written instructions, if you will. It's far more than an alphabet because alphabet is a two dimensional construct. Mm-hmm. You know, this is clearly three dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
So the programming code of DNA and of its match RNA has a programmer. The programmer is the author of life. That would be the creator of the universe. His name is Yahweh. You would naturally think that the individual who wrote the programming code for life, DNA, would probably have some pretty good programs for life. So like if I want to operate this airplane that I'm buying, I probably ought to program my mind with the pilot's operating handbook
mm-hmm.
written by the manufacturers of this airplane.
Yes.
that's I'm going to get fly it more safely, get the most out of it. So can we find a owner's manual, an operator's, a life operating handbook from the manufacturer of humans?
Yes, the Torah.
The Torah. So let's compare now. So the Torah is the operating handbook, the owner's manual, if you will. You own your own soul. You're the master of your soul. And this is a instruction book as to how to derive the most beneficial features and operate that soul in the most beneficial and productive way possible. That's what the Torah is all about. It guides us to the most productive operation of our soul.
Mm-hmm.
Proven that it comes from God. I mean, there's so much in it in terms of prophecy and accurate scientific explanation that it is an absolute certainty that it was inspired and spoken into existence by the Creator himself.
Mm-hmm.
So no question of authorship.
No.
No question on intent. And the intent of this Torah direction is to enable us to come to know who Yahweh is and to choose to participate in his family by observing the terms and conditions of his covenant as they are presented in his Torah.
Yeah, what other reason could there be? There is none. Yeah.
There is none. Okay, so we've got that, and clearly inspired by God. So this is the owner's manual written by the author of life, the creator of the universe. And so we have absolute certainty that he inspired, composed, and caused to be written the entirety of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Even Yosha acknowledged that.
Right.
The diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Okay. Now let's talk about human programming. The Christian New Testament.
Not inspired.
Not inspired, was it? There is absolutely, you know, unlike the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, where these people were speaking on for Yahweh in first person, where Yahweh is speaking through them in first person. Is there any indication, and Yahweh reached out to them, is there any indication that Yahweh reached out to Luke and that Luke thought that he was writing the inspired word of God?
No, the one exception I might give you is Revelations. However, yeah. Revelations is an awful lot like Daniel, so it's kind of a reintroduction of Daniel,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'd give you a couple of things here. I'd say that Yahuconan and Matanyah, even though there is no indication whatsoever, these guys never suggested for a moment that God was speaking through them, that they were inspired in their words, never suggested anything like that, that they were eyewitnesses to the most remarkable life of in human history.
Right.
And therefore, I'm going to pay attention to what they claim Yosha said and did, just because they're eyewitnesses to the event.
Uh-huh.
But the rest of it, other than Revelation, which is we're told there, we do find Yahweh speaking in first person through Yahuconan. So I'm going to put that into the same category, to some extent, of the Hebrew. Now, I say to some extent because, A, was spoken in Hebrew, and the oldest copies we have are in Greek.
Short.
Yeah, so it's already been and we don't have the entirety of it pre-Constantine, where the Christian Church just went willy-nilly and changed everything to their heart's desire. Okay, so the rest of it, clearly of human origins.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there is no evidence whatsoever that there is anything other than human origins in the Christian New Testament, with the fact that Paul's letters, clearly he says, I'm writing these letters, and I'm demon-possessed, and I'm insane. And So when he says, but I, Paul, say, who are you being programmed by, Christian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That's human programming. Bad. Human programming. So you're going to ignore the programming written by the author of life, Yahweh. And you're going to choose the opposite programming.
The author of death.
From the author of death. Yeah, there you go. That's what you're doing if you're a Christian. U.S. Constitution, written by God or man?
Man.
All right. So who are you going to be? You're going to be programmed by that? You're going to show your allegiance to that? You're going to trust that?
No. I don't think
Magna Carta, written by man or God?
Man.
Yeah, there you go.
Again.
All right. The catechisms of the Roman Catholic Church. You know? The church canon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man or God.
That,
yeah. Yeah, man or God. Pretty straightforward. So who are you going to be programmed by? When you watch your news on the nightly news, they say you're turned into CNN. Who are you being programmed by?
You're a wonderful government.
Yeah, if you're a active in the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and you're listening to your leading statesman speak, who are you being programmed by?
Yeah, same people.
Yeah. You read your favorite newspaper. Who have you been programmed by?
It gets overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah. Where are you going to get your programming?
Yeah.
Now, when you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the programming you receive enables you to operate your soul in extraordinary ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's enlightened. It's empowered. It's enriched. It's properly directed. It's safe. You know? So all powerful concepts, and that's the reason why the very first thing you should do, I think, as a person, is to say, all right, I want to receive the best programming possible. Do I have reason to question my religion? Well, you walked away from Christianity because there are too many questions that could not be resolved.
Yeah.
The Trinity, Christmas, Easter, Sunday, worship, the Trinity, crosses, churches, none of that stuff. Jesus, Christ, Lord. I don't know if I've hit the highlights, but Paul's letters in opposition to Yahweh's Torah. I mean, how many things were there that said, this does not compute, this is irrational, I should not trust this?
No. When you put it on paper and look at it, you cannot, how do you argue with it? It's absurd.
Right, it's absurd. So it's false hope. It's an opiate. When the government decides they want to create a pyramid scheme called Social Security, they're going to give you money for your retirement, even though the first recipients paid nothing in, and now the money is given out, future generations, not based upon what you paid in, because you could pay in nothing and you'd still receive it. In fact, if you paid in a lot, chances are you won't receive it.
Well,
and you won't question that as maybe that's probably not a good idea?
It's not good economics.
No. Deficit financing when your nation's $17 billion in debt and continues to spend more than it takes in.
Trillion.
I'm sorry. Trillion in debt and spends more than it takes in. Does that sound like that's good programming?
It's comical.
Yeah, it's comical. So I think the first responsibility we have as people is to objectively, thoughtfully evaluate the programming that we're receiving from the media, from politicians, from the military, from the judicial system, from the economic system, and determine whether or not that programming is credible. And if it's not credible, then it's obvious that none of those are credible. If they're not credible, then reject them.
Yeah.
And then look for testimony and programming that is credible, that you can test, you can probe, you can examine, you can consider, and that it always shows itself to be worthy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only aware of one set of program that works that way.
Yeah. We've already mentioned it.
Yeah. The Torah.
Mm-hmm.
The prophets contain Torah, so we'll include the prophets and the Psalms in there because they're all part of Yahweh's instructions. So that's reliable programming, and it's proven to be reliable through prophecy and through accurate history and through accurate science. It's proven that it is credible, and it has the one thing in it that you never find in any human programming. Absolute, total, and complete consistency.
Yeah. You could,
human programming always has flaws, always has contradictions.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Once you've studied it enough, though, then you get a perspective, and then you can filter everything. But you got to read it. You got to read enough of it. Now, unfortunately, there is no pure, complete Torah somewhere that we can read completely without continually doing. However, I must say that I have learned that there's an awful lot of chunks of it that are, don't pertain to us in the sense that there's nothing we could do about those things. It's because they're tempo-related or they're specific to a time and all. But what you do have in these books that you've translated so much of and been confirmed by so many, that you'll absolutely have the heart of it.
Yeah, what we've tried to do is to point out the things that are essential, mm-hmm. that provide the foundation, that provide perspective, and that enable us to come to know who Yahweh is and to understand what he's offering.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken the prime communication that Yahweh gave on those topics and then provided people with a toolbox to understand how you go about examining his word, what resources you have to use to validate translations and to compose translations. Now, there are parts of it, I would agree, that in terms of their literal implication do not apply to us.
Well, I mean, you can learn from them, but they're not as critical
correct.
As the others.
Right. There are things which, since they literally do not apply to us, that there, it's still there for a reason. And once you are adding to the nuance and the shadings and the depth of your understanding, you can see what the spiritual implications are, what guidance is being conveyed, even by the things that don't literally apply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that would be unfair about all of this, Kirk, would be if God didn't provide, if the author of DNA... of the life program didn't provide guidance on how to properly utilize and capitalize upon that life.
Right.
So if the author of life just said, I'm going to create it, and then they're on their own, you know, good luck with that. That would be mean, I think, unfair.
Yeah.
It's unfair. Maybe it's not a good term because, you know, you created life, so you gave the entity something they would not otherwise have. But it wouldn't be the most desirable scenario. The most desirable scenario is create life and then create a owner's badge. Kind of like if I gave you a brand new Ferrari. And I didn't give you the owner's manual. I just bought a TBM. If I gave you this TBM 850 aircraft, and I didn't give you the pilot's operating handbook, and suggest that, you know, you really ought to pay close attention to this.
Yeah, but it's also it's even further. There's no bonding going on there. There's no a lamb has a mother. You know,
things.
I mean, every animal has some mechanism to be trained
right.
beyond just being born and have natural instincts.
Right.
I mean, they do learn. So, and if Yahweh wants to build a relationship, he would certainly want to train us
in how to do so.
In a relationship.
Yeah. And how to do so. Mm-hmm. So you would think you would go to Yahweh's Torah teaching, which is where he begins, where he introduces the covenant, his relationship. You'd think that if you were a rational individual, curious, desirous of operating your soul in the best possible way, you would go to the book that is the only credible explanation of how your soul came to exist. And listen, pay attention to what he is offering in terms of an owner's manual, how to get the most out of your soul. Wouldn't that just be the natural inclination? And yet, how many people observe, pay close attention to, the instructions that he's provided, that programming?
They're so small, they're inconsequential.
Right. And even when you bring it to someone's attention, like the other day, I was at a doctor's getting a flight medical, and this guy had a Jesus saying on his computer. And, you know, I said to him, I said, you know, there really was no person named Jesus, and the Christian New Testament isn't inspired. You know, have you ever considered the conflict between Pauline Christianity and Yahweh's Torah instructions? And we talked about it for half an hour, and he talked all around it, but never got it.
No. I did that with a chiropractor once, and because he had Jesus sticker on this in his lobby, and us.
Yeah.
And then I also did it while some people were sitting there where we were all reading a magazine. That really freaked them all out. So.
Yeah, what you end up doing, I've done it over lunch and all different places, and what you find is that very few people can process it or willing to process it, willing to even that computer code that you're offering them, which is was conceived by the creator of the universe, won't run on their computer anymore.
Yeah, they get angry about it. I mean, I don't get angry. If you sat down and said, I'm a Buddhist, I say, fine, shoot them far away. I could have a conversation with you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And when, well, I'm not going to walk off and say, well, you know, get away from me.
Yeah. You know, some of that stuff doesn't make much sense to me, but I've got a much better solution. If you're interested, you know, I'll share that with you someday.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, wouldn't you think that if this is all designed, if the Torah is programming to help you come to know who God is and understand how to get the most out of your soul, wouldn't you expect the Creator to give you the capacity to analyze and to consider the Torah teaching and to exercise good judgment regarding it?
And he did.
It's a nesoma, isn't it?
Yes.
It's our conscience. He tells us that he gave us a soul, this thing that we own, that is the thing we should hold most dear, is our soul.
Yes.
And he said that, and that's just consciousness. That's the ability to observe your surroundings, to be observant and to respond to what you observe. That's consciousness. All animals have it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a conscience that is the seat of judgment, the capacity to exercise good judgment. And he gave us one of those. It's called a nesoma. But we have been programmed not to use it. Not we as you and me, but as humankind, we have been programmed not to use it.
But I think the common denominator between us is, and Scott and I, we're kind of against authority to begin with. So.
We are. Yeah.
No,
yeah. And what's interesting, too, is the ultimate authority, the one person who really does have authority, who is Yahweh,
totally
he does not impose his authority on his children. So those of us who are opposed to human authority find Yahweh very appealing because he doesn't come off as an authority. It's lovely. Talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.